Dave, do you know why I'm playing this song?
Because we're backwards today. This is our fade out music, isn't it?
No, yes, but there's another reason.
Yeah.
This is Kate Bush.
Yes.
This song was released in 1984.
Yeah.
It's now back at the top of the charts.
Wow.
And it became the top of the charts due to the Netflix phenomenon, Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And we've been playing it how long now?
A year.
A year, 2 years, yeah. Maybe, however long we've been doing this.
Yeah, well, we've been doing this 14 months. 14. You've been 15 months for you.
Yeah, but I think so a little over a year, almost a year and a half. And in any event, what's happened is all of a sudden in this fourth season of Stranger Things, this song basically saved a young girl in the series. And it's a long story I won't go into. You have to watch Stranger Things to see why. But all of a sudden, they pulled this record out, the producers of the show or the writers, and they dusted it off, and so they started playing it. And it became a hit in England again. Mm. Kate Bush is from England, of course. And then now all of a sudden, if you listen to K-Hits, any top pop station in America, this song, Running Up That Hill, is now back at the top of the charts in America. In fact, I happened to push the wrong button. I don't listen to K-Hits, but I happened to hit the wrong button. And I'm listening, there's Kate Bush running up the hill,
Eddie,
running up that hill.
You're so ahead of your time, Eddie.
It's weird that we have been listening to this for 14, 15 months.
Right, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm watching Stranger Things, because actually, my wife and I, we enjoy the show. It's a pretty crazy show, but it's actually a good show.
I love that first year. The next couple years got really dark.
Yeah, and this year, this is really dark, but it's so well done. Mm. I mean, it's really good.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, it started out slow. I said, oh, man, this is the worst season ever. And then you get into episode three, and everything changes. Mm. And it's like four stories going on at... because you've got people in four different places.
Yeah.
And it keeps jumping from one to another. Mm-hmm. And then it somehow culminates and everything makes sense and it all ends up in the same thing. But it's quite a show. The guys, they're brothers, the something brothers that have created this show.
Yeah.
And I think that show itself has saved Netflix, because Netflix stock has been really plummeting. Yeah. And it took a real haircut, as they call
it. Yeah.
And but,
well, they got woke for a while.
Yeah. And I think the CEO finally says enough. He kicked the Obama thing off, all of those things.
Yeah.
Those writers, they're all gone. He says, go back to sleep, get unwoke, or get lost.
People go to Netflix for entertainment. And we have to remember that. If you're selling entertainment, entertain them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he realized that this is not, you know, we're either going to give the people what they want or we're not going to give the people anything.
Yeah.
It's like me when I was playing football at Texas Tech. I was either going to flunk out or not play football. And either way, I was not going to play football, right?
Yeah, right.
So I had to come to that realization that wait a minute. If I don't play football, I'm not going to play football, but I'll still be in college. If I flunk out, I'm not going to play football, but I'm not going to be in college anymore. So I think I better quit.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. That's why I never went back.
Hey, varsity major division sports, you know, it's a full-time job at least.
Yeah. And in my case, it was a different situation because I was a walk-on and I was living in a different dorm and I was moving up. I mean, and then I got pneumonia.
Oh God. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. I broke my arm. I was getting pneumonia. I was working extra hard and I had to, my schedule was all weird and I had to go over to the athletic dorm and then to the stadium and into this and this and this. And I was laying and I'm sitting there with pneumonia in those days. I don't know if they still have this. We had an infirmary at Texas Tech. So I'm actually laid up in the infirmary listening to the Tech freshman team play Texas A&M on the radio. Oh. And I'm laying there, you know, sick as a dog with pneumonia while they're playing. And the realization hit me, you know, and I'm thinking about my grades, my school, and everything in front of me. What am I going to, you know, what's my future look like? And I weighed the options. And I know my parents, they sent me to Texas Tech not to play football. They sent me to Texas Tech.
Yeah, for an education.
To get an education. So I think I was number three on the depth chart or something. Yeah. And I think I would have moved up or made it. But I just, in the end, I made the decision that it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, my son had to look at that. He had a small school looking at him. He just didn't have the size to be playing middle linebacker in the college level. But he's good, you know. So a few will make it. But I said, you're still going to have to pay half your tuition. He didn't get a full ride.
What was it? Football?
Football.
Okay, because like I know soccer is like that. Soccer, they rarely pay full.
Right.
Full ride. Unless once you get to a senior level, if you make All-American or something, they'll pay whatever.
And so I told him, I said, you're still going to pay $20,000 a year. Yeah. And football's going to be a full-time job plus going to college. Yeah. And I think about this. And you know what he did? He said, yeah, football was nice. I'll take free at TCC for 2 years. So he went to Tulsa Community College, which is free for Tulsa County.
Yeah, my youngest son, he went to University of Dayton to play soccer. And he was getting half rides for 3 years. And then his senior year, finally, he kept tearing his ACL. He tore his ACL in the playoffs in high school. End of season, they're in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. That's a good year, isn't it, to recover?
And so they still honored his scholarship at the University of Dayton, but he didn't play that because he had surgery in the summer.
Yeah.
And so he didn't come back until he played through the summer.
Yeah, and they might have redshirted him that year anyway.
Right. Well, and then he tore it again.
Oh, God.
I know.
Yeah.
So then he... he actually ended up playing on a semi-pro team in Austin. That team is now pro, but he ended up playing there with that torn ACL. And then he had the surgery again.
Yeah.
And I have to tell that story one day. It was the weirdest. The second surgery, the repair, it was the funniest thing. When the doctor came out, it was like a Frankenstein movie. But... Yeah. Great doctor, but he was a doctor for the Cincinnati Reds. He's a professional athlete surgeon, and he took care of it. But it was the funniest.
Nice.
But anyway, so finally I told my son, I'd been wanting him to quit anyway. I said, look, this isn't going to get you anywhere. Pro soccer's not paying you anything. You're not going to get drafted, nothing, you know. So he finally he gave up that whole thing. He just loved soccer so much. So he quit, and he had the greatest year ever of school. Finally got to do all the things that because they would have two-a-day practices. Mm-hmm. So they'd practice at 6 in the morning before school.
Yeah.
You know, clean up, breakfast. It's like being in a military academy almost. Mm-hmm. And then they would go to class, get done, practice again. Then you'd have to study, and by the time so there's no social life.
Yeah.
Then you've got your games, you're traveling, you're this.
Yeah.
So, but that senior year, in fact, every kid that came in as a freshman with him, every last one of them either quit or got cut.
Wow.
Every last one of them. Wow. And so none of them ended up from his freshman year to senior. They all ended up just going to school in the end. And they were all, but they're still, to this day, still very good friends, and they're all doing well.
You got nice.
Lawyers, accountants, businessmen. My son is the vice president of operations for, I think I told you, the Florida Panthers hockey team. which is the weirdest thing.
Panthers hockey team.
The hockey team, yes, yeah. Yep. Yeah, he worked at Georgia Tech and operations.
What town do they play their home games in?
Fort Lauderdale,
yeah. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's weird how things take you. It took him first to University of Massachusetts for an internship.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Georgia Tech, which he loved. He spent 10 years at Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And then KU, he was director of operations, football operations there, and then assistant athletic director, and then he ended up.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, I remember one day, well, it might have been a week, Rush Limbaugh, back in the late 90s, just got on an issue about most people, because he's talking about the foolishness for some careers of wasting your time and money in college and having all that student loan debt. And he just took calls from people who started over career-wise and went a different direction and found greater happiness and success doing something they never went to college for.
Mm-hmm.
And it just surprises you. You know, it just adds to the foolishness of getting $100,000, $200,000 in student loan debt.
Yeah.
For something you know, you might suck at even if you do like it.
Yeah, that's true. And even there, what happened, it's weird because the way he got into his job now as vice president of operations mm-hmm. for a professional hockey NHL team
mm-hmm.
is... He interned, or not interned, it was his graduate, he was a graduate assistant, mm-hmm. not a graduate assistant, yeah. He was a, what would you call, I guess he was an intern, it was a
it's essentially work study, the same thing.
Work study.
Yeah.
It's his work study.
Oh, okay.
Where he would get paid, part of it is because, like your son, they only had the half scholarships,
yeah.
They give 50%,
yeah.
And then they give you other yeah, things.
Even Pell Grants, when I went to school, they did some work study and some was straight out cash.
Right. So he got the work study, and his work study was in sports information.
Nice.
So, but he starts out, you know, he's setting up cameras for mm-hmm. soccer games, girls soccer, this or that. And then next thing you know, he's doing basketball. And he went at UMass, part of his thing was women's softball.
Mm.
He was doing softball, girls softball and soccer. So they relegated him to the women. Mm-hmm. And then when he went to Georgia Tech, they had him doing the girls baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And, softball again. Yeah. Am I chauvinist or what?
Hey,
girls baseball. Listen,
women's softball is a much funner sport to watch.
Oh, I love watching
them. Than the men's baseball.
Oh, yeah. I love watching them. All of them. I mean, girls can play that softball.
They play with
soccer,
much more passion
and
softball.
Yeah, and basketball. I mean, they hit those threes. Yeah. But anyway, so that's how he got into this, and he ended up. The way he ended up at Georgia Tech, he could have been the sports information director
mm-hmm.
at Manhattan College, just north of New York City.
Okay.
North of Manhattan. But he said, no, he wanted to get a graduate assistant job at Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, they were offering a certain stipend every month
yeah.
and room and board and a master's degree.
Yes, he had to go to school, too.
Right. They were paying for a master's degree in sports management.
Yep.
So now he has a master's in sports management mm-hmm. that Georgia Tech paid yep. for. And he got it. So it took him a whole... He never chose any of this, his life,
yeah.
when he went in this mm-hmm. way. You know what I mean? His major was in journalism and... Yeah. And marketing and journalism.
Well, that's marketing's what, good.
Yeah, marketing and journalism.
That works for what he does.
What he went into school for. But mm-hmm. but through his little work-study program,
mm-hmm.
teaching him how, you know, to do
yeah.
Sports, setting up, you know, videoing soccer games and doing mm-hmm. all the, helping the guy who was, and then writing the articles. And for the website, for the school websites, you know, they always have
mm-hmm.
the write-ups of the games and all.
Oh, yeah.
First, he was having to watch the guy who did it. And by his senior year, he was doing it.
Yep.
So it's funny. And it's exactly what you say. You go in with one mm-hmm. intention.
Yeah.
And you come out of college and your life takes you in a whole different direction.
It does.
Or, as you said, you realize, wait a minute, college isn't what I need. You know, you can go into trade school.
Yes.
Spend a whole lot less.
Yeah.
Or you can just go to job if you find the right job and learn on the job to be an electrician, a plumber. My former assistant at my insurance job, her brother ended up getting a job as an electrician and eventually became a journeyman. And now, you know, makes big bucks doing commercial electrician jobs, making buku money an hour.
You know, Ryan Walters, running for superintendent of education, sat here a couple months ago. I think it was in our podcast he talked about one of his kids when he's teaching high school at McAllister came and apologized to him and said, I'm not going to go to college. And that, on the face of it, disappointed Ryan that this kid felt like he needed to apologize, because that's the problem with our culture in our schools, because all of the influential leaders, teachers, mentors in school, they all went the college 4 years degree route, you know, and so they, even if they don't intend to, they push that direction on kids. But this kid said, I'm going to a trade school instead.
Right.
I'm going to learn how to weld. And they've told me some things I really want to do. And he said, one of them is underwater welding.
Ooh.
And he said he still gets emails and pictures from this guy, remote locations all over the world.
I'm getting goosebumps
out there on oil derricks out in the middle of seas, you know. And he gets to do that stuff. And
just imagine that, flying all over the world. And you're exiled. You're down underwater.
And he's making over $100,000, and he isn't 30 years old yet.
Now my goosebumps have goosebumps.
Yeah. You know, because there are some things that just college. One guy called Rush Limbaugh one day and said, I really want to go into talk radio. Can you tell me what college I should go to? And Rush said, go to work. They don't teach this in college.
No, you either know how to do it or you don't.
Well, I tell you, my oldest son, you know, we homeschooled our kids, and he's more of a self-learner. It took a long time for me to get him to at least do one semester of college. But he wanted to go into photography initially. And I knew a photographer. I called him. I said, hey, my son would really like, before he goes off to school, find out if he even enjoys it. I said, he'll vacuum your floors. He'll do whatever. You know, can you find him something to give him a little experience? And he's like, oh, I remember your son. I used to teach him Photoshop when you guys would come over to put up my Christmas lights, you know? So he goes in there. He gets them, they were 3 weeks behind. He gets them caught up in 1 week. And so they start farming him some photo retouching, you know, some of the very artistic stuff. And he so impresses his boss, by the end of the summer, they were going to let him go because he was summer help. They fired a girl they had that had a 4-year college degree in photography because my son was doing a better job than she was, because it's an art.
Right, right.
And you either are artistic or you're not. They don't teach artistic skill and talent like that. You know, they'll refine what you've got, but they can't make you talented.
Right. And usually what I tell people is, if you want to do something and you go to, say, a trade school and you become good at it on your own, then you want to better yourself, in a college course or a degree will give you extra tools, new tools to refine the talent you already have.
Yeah.
Then you pursue it.
Yeah, like his.
But it's not the other way around. Going to college isn't, and getting the tools isn't going to develop your craft.
Yeah, that's it.
In other words, you're not going to become a better pilot by going to college, and then you're going to become a better pilot. You can become a great pilot, but if you want to learn the latest, you know, an X-23B or whatever, you know, the latest fighter jet. What was it? Chuck Yeager.
Yeah.
Chuck Yeager. He didn't go to some I think he started out crop dusters.
Oh, yeah.
Flying crop dusters and doing young and flying and coming and all these.
Charles Lindbergh started out the same way.
Yeah. And so that's how, and then later he learned how to fly a newer model. And they say, yeah, if you want to go faster, you push this button. And this makes, you know, this is this and this and this. And the rest is history. So, yeah, school, especially today, is overblown. It's overpriced. Mm-hmm. Now, the only area, see, and this used to make me mad. Mm-hmm. For example, I majored in business. Mm-hmm. And I had friends that majored in government, history, basket weaving, or whatever. And I remember AT&T came around and started recruiting. And it's funny because I this was like the year after I graduated, but all of these guys got hired by AT&T and these different companies, but they were hiring all these black government and history and education majors, had nothing to do with business, and they became marketing executives, you know, or account executives, they call them, you know, to handle these.
Salesmen.
Handle these accounts for businesses and setting up their systems and everything. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing, you know, they didn't go to the business department, but they went, what happened, this was early on, AT&T needed to hire and wanted to be on the cutting edge of hiring minorities.
Yeah.
So they went to the area where all the minorities were, which was usually, at that point, it was in government, in education classes.
That was before Black Studies was a major, right?
Yeah, really. I'm sure, yeah, it's true. If it had been Black Studies, they'd have been in that area. But, and then they figured, we'll train you to do whatever you want you to do. We just want you to get out of college.
Yeah, there's a lot of huge global corporations that just draw a line, say, you need to have a bachelor's degree. They don't care what your degree is.
They don't care what it is.
I know a lot of insurance companies. State Farm's been that way for decades.
Oh, yeah. And now, when I started with Farmers, you had to have a degree.
Yeah. And they didn't care what it was.
But then they got rid of that because, well, they wanted you to have, or what they call it, in lieu of. So let's say if you had 5 years of sales experience.
Yeah.
So they'd go to these... like if a district manager went to a clothing store, a men's clothing store or a women's, and they see a salesperson that was really good at selling suits, you know, or a women's store, that someone's really good, they'd give them a card, go come see me, and then you could be hired as a farmer's insurance agent because you were just good at sales.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you know, and of course you had to be able to pass some exams. That's another reason, you know, the insurance exam, and which is not that easy. But so you had to have some skill and some mental acuity as well. Yeah. But it's interesting how that works and how people's life's education levels and experiences shape throughout their travel, their future. I remember I left at age 30 to become a missionary, and I'm thinking, oh, what if I get done with this and I come back in 5 years? Who wants to hire a 35-year-old?
Oh, God.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, no, think about it.
I know.
It's a thought. I'm going to be a 35-year-old ex-missionary. Who wants a 35? When I came back and I was 40.
Yeah.
It wasn't just 5 years. I was gone actually 11 years. And so I was 41, actually. And so I come back, and I end up with Farmers. And here is 30 years later. I've been an insurance agent for 30 years.
Yeah.
But who knew? You know, and I don't know if I've ever told you all this story. Before, when I was praying through about giving up my job and everything, and I was debating law.
Well, and you had a young family, right?
Yeah, yep, two little babies.
Yeah.
And it was law school or become a missionary.
Wow.
Law school. I knew I was quitting my insurance adjuster's job.
Right.
And so I remember, man, this is a big step, because his friend asked us to join him with a Youth with a Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and that was in their early days.
Yeah,
people didn't know about them.
This was in 1980.
Yeah.
And so I remember one afternoon I'm laying on my bed and I'm praying and I'm thinking about this and I'm just laying back. And I had the radio on with music. And Bette Midler, of all people, Bette Midler, who turned out to be a flake, but God used her. God can use flakes.
Yes.
The song The Rose came on. And it says it's the dream that's afraid of waking.
Yep.
That never learns.
Yeah, great lyrics.
Never takes
song.
A chance. And it's it's the life that's afraid of dying that never learns how to live.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it was like, and that was me. It just spoke to me. And I said, what, wait a minute. What?
Yeah.
And it was like the Lord speaking, because this was like a dream for me to go serve God, to become a missionary. But I was afraid I was going to. I'm just dreaming, and it's just a dream. And if you wake up, it's going to be a nightmare. You're going to come back in 5 years. Your kids are going to be 6 and 7 years old, and you won't have a job. You won't have anything. You're 35 years old. Who wants to hire, you know, all of this? And so that was all I was thinking. That was my dream, and I was afraid of waking up from the dream. And then also the other part, I was afraid that there was death in it, but it's a life that's afraid of dying that never learns to live.
Yeah.
And so that's what spoke to me, and I think that was the final signal I needed to make the decision to go.
Here's
the
thing, Eddie. In our younger days, and I think you and I both can relate to this, you're always out looking for a job. Who'll hire me? Who'll hire me? I don't think either of you or me, either of us today, would take a job punching a time clock.
You're right.
There's something about self-employment that is so liberating.
You know, I've always thought about that. I'm the kid. I still remember vividly, fourth, fifth grade. I'm sitting in class, junior high school. I look outside. I see somebody outside. I'm in class. And there's somebody outside running free, an adult. And I always thought, what do they do? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because it's 2 in the afternoon,
yeah,
and they're free. They're not in a office or in a classroom. I want to do that. And then I've thought about it so often that
little
at 2
did
in the afternoon.
He works the graveyard shift down at the factory.
Yeah, at 2 in the morning, they're locked in a cubicle or whatever, or behind, in a sweatshop. Yeah. No, but I've often thought, Lord, you're so good that I am able to do that.
Yeah.
I have that kind of job that 2 and 3 in the afternoon, you know, I want to go.
Yeah, the downside is we don't get sick leave. We don't get paid vacation, right?
If we have to work.
Yeah.
Like I go on appointments on weekends.
Oh, yeah.
You know, somebody says, my wife and I come and meet with you Saturday at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
You know, how about 8 o'clock? I'll be there.
Yeah.
6 in the morning, I'll be there. You know, so, yeah. But I don't mind that.
Yeah.
You don't mind that.
Right.
If somebody says, Dave, I need you to go build me a closet, but you have to do
it on Saturday
and Sunday.
I was always afraid when I was young and just married and starting a family and everything, man, what if I really make my boss mad and I get fired? And is that boss held so much sway over
your
me.
Life, yeah.
Yeah, and now I've got hundreds of bosses. They're called my clients.
Yeah.
If I lose one, I go get another. Yeah. You know? So it's actually
try to
a lot
keep,
more
You
liberating.
Try to keep them happy, but you realize that you can't make everybody
you
happy.
You can't, right.
You can't. And so usually the ones you can't make happy, you're kind of glad because you really don't want to be working
for
them.
Yeah, and there's some of them, you get an early warning. No, I don't think I can. I've got room for yours because you're like, God, I see a problem there.
Right.
Yeah, this is the way things happen sometimes in life. And that's why I say kids at 18 years old, do not blow your whole future because the government even made it so you can't even file bankruptcy and get out of that student loan payment.
Yeah.
I think that's the only exception.
Yeah. No, that's true. That is true. Well, depends on whether it's a federal student loan or one of those private loans. But yeah, no, it's a tough deal. Be careful. Be careful on the student loan deal, because it is in the schools. It just makes me so angry. A couple of years ago, I did a study on endowments. You know, I think Harvard has the biggest.
Oh yeah.
I mean, in the billions.
Oh right.
They could pay for every student. They could pay for every student to go to Harvard for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Full tuition and books.
Oh yeah.
For 50 years for every student that they took in. But instead, what do? They let it grow and they give no scholarships. And it's just, it's insane. It's insane. They'll do national merit. They'll let the government pay you.
Yeah.
They'll let the government give you a scholarship, but they're not going to give you, and they have these endowments that keep going. My question is, what's the endowment for? Why do you have an endowment if you're not going to give it to anyone?
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, OU, I think their endowment is it may be $2 billion.
Oh, they got quite a bit.
Evidently,
they have a villa in Italy that they own. I don't know what they need it for, but they've got one, you know.
Well, yeah, for your one semester of overseas study.
Yeah. And then USC, I mean, you don't offer Lincoln Riley that kind of a contract. A free jet for his family to use whenever? Fly him wherever. That's an endowment when you can afford that.
Heavy donors.
Yes.
Well, no, I do say that. Okay, that's separate. Okay, the athletic fund is separate from. That's a whole different.
Oh, they LLC. Can't tap into endowments to sweeten that deal.
No. That's totally a separate. They separate. Those are private. It's weird how that all works.
Okay. Yeah.
But in a lot of cases, the athletic fund. Is richer than the academic.
Oh yeah,
which is a sad. No, that's sad story too.
No, you know, if you think about it. When my oldest son worked in administration at ORU, and he had to redo their website and stuff, and he said, "No, we can't even run the sports website on the same server as education. That's how tight NCAA controls the whole athletics."
Right.
So yeah, so funding is that way too. By the way, well, listen, I know we've gone down rabbit trails, I want
to
say.
No, this is important stuff for people to know. And I think the bottom line, what we're trying to say is, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Oh, good line.
And whether it's a university, trade school, or none of the above.
Yeah.
It's if you make the effort. If you show up, give your full effort to it, you will succeed.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of that. Now, there are times you will find someone that may want to take advantage of your gift, of your giving, of yourself. That's when you find someone else who will appreciate. You take the opportunity to learn everything you can about what you're doing under that crappy boss.
Yeah.
And then you take that gift and know everything you know about it, and you either start your own competitive business or you go to work for somebody else that will appreciate you.
Yeah, it's not as important whether your boss likes you as whether your boss respects you. If they don't respect you, you can't make them like you so much that they're ever going to respect you.
Right.
And by backtracking to Kate Bush, along the way I want to say, my favorite Netflix is not Stranger Things. It's The Ranch. And sadly, I think we're not going to see any more episodes of it. That was Ashton Kutcher and a bunch. It's if you're conservative, you're going to love The Ranch because it's about life out in Gunnison, Colorado, or they call it Garrison, and it's about a bunch of conservative ranchers and their view of a society, and it's great. But Ashton Kutcher just announced he is severely paralyzed and may never get his sight back.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. That's
yes. I forget what it was he got hit, and Bear Grylls, who does those survivors, he did a series with Bear Grylls, and he kind of told his story this last week.
So The Ranch Is it a fictional story?
Yes, it's a sitcom.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was a reality show.
No, so. It isn't. It is a great, and they would do 10 episodes, release them all at once, and then the next year, another 10 episodes. I think they went about 5 or 6 seasons on it.
It reminds me, because Amazon has, what's the one where they're hunting conservatives?
Oh.
The movie.
Oh, yeah, I forget.
It's available on Prime.
Yeah.
On Prime Video, they have it. And I haven't watched it yet. I keep wanting to, and I keep, there's so many things out there to watch. But, all right. Which reminds me, by the way, we do have stuff to get into.
Yeah.
But I did watch, there's a new one, mm-hmm. and it's called Carter on Netflix.
Hmm.
Carter, okay. And it's a Korean-American deal.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, today, I think Korean cinema is among the best in the world.
Hmm.
Now, it's a strange story. I can't even really describe it, although there are some of the most amazing visual effects I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff they're able to do photographically... I mean, I'm serious. They've got guy jumping from train to a helicopter. Helicopters going upside down with people hanging on them. Trains. I'm telling you, you can't believe. What I would like to see, they need to come out with an outtake or a whole film segment of how they did this.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did this,
wow.
But if you get a chance, check out this show because it will blow your mind.
Okay, so that's Carter. On Amazon Prime?
This is on Netflix.
Netflix, okay.
Carter's okay. The name of it, and it's Korean. Now, it's funny, I don't like to watch them in English,
mm-hmm.
although it's Korean-American. It's got the CIA involved, it's got North Korea, South Korea.
Mm.
Nobody's good.
Okay.
They're all bad.
Okay.
U.S. is bad. The CIA is bad. They're trying to kill him. The North Koreans are trying to use him. The South Korea. But you got this guy. It's really an amazing, seriously, it will blow your mind, the show. It's just crazy, crazy show. And you're the whole time, you're trying to figure out, okay, wait a minute. What's going on? Whose side is he on? Whose side mm-hmm. is he on? Who's on first, you know? But again, the thing that really makes it, the thing that makes this show, because the end, I'm still confused at the end a little bit,
mm-hmm.
pretty much confused. And you don't know, are they going to do another one or how did it really end? Did it really end?
Wow.
It's one of those deals.
But it's captivating all along, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's action all the way through. Mm-hmm. They do stuff with motorcycles, cars, this helicopter and train thing. Seriously, I promise you, you have never, ever, Dave, you have never seen action filmed like the action in this film. And like I said, I don't know how many people, they need to put a thing, no humans were killed in the making. You know how they always say, animals were killed. They need to put, no humans were killed in the making.
So between stunts and special effects and cinematography and CGI, they just take it to a whole new level.
I don't even think there was any CGI.
We don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I don't even know if there was CGI. I think everything you see is real.
Wow.
And I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
Because the way they have these helicopters and cars and motor and the filming, how they were able to get the cameras, like when these motorcycles were running through things and cars. Like I said, if you get a chance, check out Carter. And you can get it in English only where they overdub the Korean. I personally like it in Korean and read the subtitles. And when they speak English, everything's in English.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's in the original language always.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's just how I like my stuff. But you can, the beauty of Netflix, you can choose which language you always want to watch. And if it's a German.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. If it's a German show, you can watch it in German.
So they have the audio channels.
Yeah, right on it. You choose right mm-hmm. when you turn it on. It asks you which language you want to watch and which which subtitles you wanted in and all okay. of that. It's very nice. But anyway, the name of it is Carter. It's just crazy. I've got to watch it. I'm waiting for my wife to get home so we can watch it together. Mm. She'll probably hate it.
Oh, yeah. Don't you hate that when your wife says, how dare you watch an episode without me?
Well, no. She'll probably say, you thought this was good?
Oh.
That's worse. That's,
oh.
I don't mind her.
What a diss.
I don't mind her saying, you watched it without me? Say, yeah, because I want to see it again. You know, that takes care of that. But when she says, oh, it's just another man show. All right. Hey, listen, we got to get into some serious stuff.
Yes.
Okay, should I do this?
Oh, that helps. Well, we've already done a bumper.
I know. But I'm never going to go there again. All right. This is what it is. This is who I am. This is where I'm finally. All right, just thought I would do that to clear the palate.
There you go.
And let you know where we stand and who I am.
On with the show, this is it.
Who he is. He is David Van Rizingham. I am Eddie Huff. You're listening to and watching Fresh Black Coffee.
Yeah. Ta-da.
Hey, all right, Dave, we'll get right into it. I'm going to start with the least important moving back up.
Okay.
87,000 new IRS agents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is bigger than the U.S. Border Patrol.
It is.
It's bigger than the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
All of those combined.
Yep.
It's bigger than all of those combined people. The IRS, it doubles the size of the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes.
Now you tell me why we need 87,000 new. Oh, and here's the best part.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to be 00 agents, like 007s.
Hmm.
They will have a license to kill.
That's true.
You heard, right?
Yeah.
In fact, it's a job requirement.
Yeah. Actually, I've got 17 requirements here.
Yeah, but
Babylon Bee. They have 17 requirements.
I'm trying to get okay. to the seriousness,
serious news.
The gravity of this, yeah. And you're going to bring in the Babylon Bee.
I'm sorry, I'm in a giddy mood. But yeah, this is in Eddie.
And this is not a joke.
Yeah.
This is for real. That a part of the requirement is that you not only will be required to carry a weapon, mm-hmm. but you must be ready to shoot to kill. I mean, what job requirement to work for the IRS, to be an IRS agent, you must be ready to shoot to kill.
And I've got a hint here. You know why? You think our federal courts are corrupt. Whether you're Steve Bannon, railroaded like him, or any of the how many hundreds January 6 people, now they're denied it, even their habeas corpus rights. You have less rights in tax court than you have in our criminal courts. The IRS operates in the tax courts where you're assumed guilty until you prove yourself innocent. That's another thing to think about.
Yeah.
You know, so, and listen, any IRS agent can find anything on anyone in this country. I'll bet you haven't gone a day without violating IRS, unless you're 2 years old.
Well, let me say this, though. And I ask you all to pray.
Mm-hmm.
Pray with us. That November, the Republicans do take the House and Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And not just by squeaking by.
Right.
Pray that we overwhelmingly...
A mandate, yes.
...take the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why. I spoke with Mark Wainmullen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I called him about this. It was really troubling me, okay? Mm-hmm. I asked him about a couple of things, the Mar-a-Lago, mm-hmm. which he came out. He spoke out on mm-hmm. Newsmax and,
yeah.
and Fox. He's been very vocal on all of this. You probably saw him.
Yes, I have, yeah.
But I asked him specifically about this, and he hopefully will win the election, the primary coming up.
Yeah.
The runoff, which is in a week from Tuesday.
Yes, 10 days.
And, but I asked him, Mark Wayne, what's going to happen? What can you do? What can the Senate do? He said that they can defund the IRS.
Yes.
He said that they can do. That's why it is so important. And he said they fully intend to defund this. He said it's going to take them 9 months to implement this. So it's going to take them 6 months. So in other words, they won't even be able to start doing this until the new year anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, start adding all of these thousands of agents. And so what they will be able to do, if they defund the IRS, they will basically reverse everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. So that's the power mm-hmm. of Congress. Okay, because they hold the purse strings. Now,
yes.
Now, of course, he won't be there anymore. Because that's actually in the legislature.
In the House. Yes.
He will actually be in the Senate.
Yeah.
So whoever, if it's Josh Brahim, mm-hmm. which that's a runoff too, right?
Yes,
Josh
it is.
Josh Brahim and mm-hmm. who is he?
That's a tight one against Avery Fricks.
Avery Fricks.
Right now in the polling, undecided is leading the polls. It's that tight. Yeah.
We're going to get to that in a minute, also, yeah. by the way, to finish this off. But anyway, there is hope. Okay, there's hope that we can undo all of this mess that we're in right now. We're in a tight spot, people. We just want to bring the gravity of all of this to your attention. Okay, mm-hmm. So please understand this is very, very, very important that you do your part election day. Mm-hmm. Do not miss these elections, okay? Do not miss the vote. Do not take this lightly. Do not be fooled, and we're going to get to that in a minute, how you can be fooled, okay? So remember, 87,000 new IRS 00 agents, mm-hmm. 007, 008, 0010, 007, 087,000, okay? And I'm not just joking here. These will be 00 agents. So remember that. We do not want the United States turned into the USSA. Mm-hmm. We do not want to become the Soviet States of America. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll leave that there.
Yep.
next thing.
Yeah.
Joe Biden likes to do Common Core math.
Oh.
Yeah. This week... the new inflation numbers came out.
Oh, yeah.
And the consumer price index came back at 9.1. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 8.4. It was 8.4.
Yeah, okay.
Which was down from 9.1
yeah.
last month. Okay. Yeah. So because it went to 8.4, Joe Biden says it was zero.
Yeah.
We have zero inflation. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Joe. 8.4 is the real number. 8.4% higher than a year ago, which means it's still. And the only reason it went down to 8.4 is because gasoline dropped. And everything else still went up.
Okay. And why did gasoline drop?
Because people quit driving.
Well, that's one. But also our strategic reserves have been robbed. So that Biden doesn't look so bad. Strategic reserve is not just to make it easier on the consumer. It's to run our military in the event that we're in a crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just...
Yeah. Some strategy, huh?
Yeah.
Some strategy. Rob all of our strategic reserves so that when we need those against possibly Russia, mm-hmm. China... Iran, Venezuela, you name the number of enemies that are rising grows daily, and we will not have that because Biden wants to keep the inflation numbers down. Mm-hmm. But you take out gasoline.
Yeah.
It rose again.
Yeah.
9-point-something%. Okay. Food, people, food and housing rose. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you want to believe the crap they're selling,
yeah,
then you go ahead.
Yeah.
To your own detriment.
Yeah. What I want to know is, since inflation's now at zero, then this bill that just passed the House to fight inflation, is Biden going to veto that now that we don't need it anymore?
Well, it's too late.
No, he hasn't signed it yet.
Oh, he hasn't signed it.
Yeah. The same one that gives us 87,000 new IRS agents, all to fight inflation. You know? Yeah. So, yeah, that's a deal. And by the way, you want to see Babylon Bee's take on it. It's called 17 Requirements to Be an IRS Agent. It's a good read, but it's a little long. I'm going to pass today.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, this IRS, IRA. Maybe they're going to hire IRA.
Yeah, there you go.
Terrorists to be IRS agents. Yeah. They have licenses to kill.
Yeah.
The raid on Mar-a-Lago has been the biggest, almost 24/7 news coverage.
It's a big deal.
Over. So, for those who may have not heard, which is pretty hard to believe, but just in case, on Wednesday, the Department of Justice, using the FBI, raided the Trump home at his golf course resort in Florida,
mm-hmm.
Mar-a-Lago, it's mm-hmm. called, and they spent 9 hours going through his things and came out with, I believe, 12 boxes of materials.
And some really lacy under things, I understand. They spent 10 hours in his wife's closet.
Oh, in addition to the other 9 hours?
Well, it was 10 hours of total in the house.
Oh,
yeah.
Was it 10? I thought 9. Okay. But here's a couple of strange things about it, okay? If you only came out with 12 boxes, okay, what took you 10 hours to find 12 boxes?
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, and I know, what they were doing.
Oh, a bunch of things. They could have been planting things. They could have just been fishing for things. I think definitely they're fishing
for things. Yeah, for sure. For sure they were fishing.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to believe they were planting as well because of mm-hmm. what's coming out since then. Some of the reports.
Whenever a cop says, hey, shut off that camcorder, quit videotaping me, and that's a secret police.
Right.
Okay. You have to stay out of their way.
Yeah, but first, his lawyers were not allowed to get anywhere near it,
mm-hmm.
and they had to shut off all recording.
Yeah, see, it's one thing for them to say, hey, we're coming in, but for them to kick the occupants out of their own dwelling, now I really have a problem with that.
Right.
You know, again, you stay out of their way if they've got a valid, you know, warrant, but they can't make you homeless. And that's essentially what they did. They said, you know, you guys go out parking lots, okay. That was about it. And by the way, they did, Trump's people refused to shut off the closed circuit TV. So the attorney who I saw on TV talking about, she says, I don't know what went on. I had to sit in my hot car in the parking lot the whole time. She says, but Trump up there in New York City, he's watching everything.
So they recorded it all.
Well, it had closed circuit TV. I assume you record everything on something like this. But yeah, so this will be interesting. But you can only do that you actually have a camera view.
Well, also, here's the other thing. Even though they recorded them taking materials mm-hmm. out, you don't know what got put in once it gets to Washington and so forth.
Exactly. And listen, these are the same people that got Michael Flynn refused by putting him in a perjury trap. These are the same people that through to the federal courts, the Steele dossier, which they knew came from Clinton's campaign. It was a bunch of smear. And I finally feel vindicated because a lot of people thought I was a radical in 2017 when I called for the dismantling and shuttering of the FBI completely. Mm. Now everybody's on board with that. I tell you, somebody said it really well. In England, they separate MI5 and MI6. They separate the investigation from the police powers so that you don't have... the FBI has consolidated all this power. That's one. And then number two, Homeland Security. That was another consolidation under Bush. G.W. Bush probably did more to harm us because he's looking for the short term. How do I get rid of this global threat of Islamic terror? But when you have to call something the Patriot Act in order to pass the most unpatriotic thing, which is, you know, the whole FISA courts. That's how they got Trump in the first place.
Yeah.
And this is a police state. I'm sorry, I went on my rant.
No. You're on a roll. It's exactly the truth. It's exactly where we are. That's why I said we are really the USSA. I mean, we're no longer the, you know, United States. We're land of the free, home of the brave.
Yeah.
We're land of the bound and home of the cowards. The Democratic Party right now is the most despicable, underhanded, and corrupt organization, and the government that represents us today is about as trustworthy as nothing. I mean, you cannot trust anything. I mean, seriously, you cannot trust anything. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I who would have thought we could ever get to this point? Mm-hmm. Who would have believed it? Yeah. And I'm sick and tired of hearing everybody say, oh, but the FBI overall is filled with good intention, men and women, trustworthy. I'm tired of hearing that. Mm-hmm. No, where are they? If you've got all of these good, everybody should be blowing the whistle. They should be saying, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
We're not doing this.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Stand up.
The job's not that important. I believe, as you said, shut it down. It's corrupt to the core. Yeah. Start brand new. But then again, how do you begin?
Yeah.
How do you begin?
They have always been this corrupt. You go back to J. Edgar Hoover, and it's all about having dirt to blackmail politicians so they get their way. Now, when there's people that are outsiders that they don't have dirt on yet, they're really afraid of those. I was talking to Gary Richardson, a former federal prosecutor, friend of mine, good man, and he recounted his own case when Reagan appointed him to be federal prosecutor for Eastern Oklahoma. And he said the FBI set him up and lied about him and said he refused to sit down for a vetting interview. Eddie told me he had actually just on the whim, a friend had said, you know, get something to record interviews in your office. And he did. And it was the same morning FBI called and they spent an hour in his office. And then that FBI agent out of Oklahoma City lied and told the federal government, you know, headquarters, that he refused to be interviewed. And Eddie produced that. I mean, Gary produced that tape, or at least told me had it. That FBI agent should have been fired. The FBI refused to fire the agent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
They are corrupt from the top down.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm tired of hearing, the rank and file are good people.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it.
I don't either.
I'm not buying it.
And so you've got to definitely shut the whole thing down. Listen, we have plenty of federal law enforcement agencies, whether it's ATF, Customs, Border. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of them. Mm-hmm. It's not like we got by for 150 years without an FBI. They only came in, it was actually part of Woodrow Wilson's deal.
Oh, that ought to tell you something right there. That ought to say.
Right. In the CIA, we didn't form the CIA until after World War II.
Right.
You know? But we've got problems, And here's the thing. It's the old axiom of Benjamin Franklin. Those who will exchange essential liberty for temporary safety deserve neither safety nor liberty. And what happened after 9/11 is we traded in so much of our liberties because we're scared of a terrorist. Yeah. And we called it the Patriot Act so that you would think it was okay.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're a good FBI, good police, good whatever, prove it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Prove it. If this BS continues, you're not proving it.
I'll make one exception. Any FBI agent that comes forward now and blows the whistle on the whole thing, they're leadership.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But where are they? Now, I'm hearing from Senator Grassley and certain that there are some whistleblowers coming forward saying there's some raggedy stuff going on.
Yeah.
There's bad stuff going on. And they're starting to tell on this. Mm-hmm. Maybe they see that this can't continue. Mm-hmm. This is unsustainable. You talk about sustainability, right? I think there are some people that understand that this is unsustainable in a true free republic. The other thing I'm so sick and tired of, every time I turn around and hear a Democrat say the word our democracy.
Yeah, really.
You're making me puke.
Yep.
Making me puke. If I hear you utter the word democracy on any network, click.
Yeah.
I'm off.
Yeah.
That I do not want to hear you utter the word democracy because you wouldn't know the word democracy if it bit you on the behind. Okay. You do not understand what democracy means. You have no clue what democracy means. To you, democracy means you can turn and twist this nation and the course of this nation to fit you and your goals, not what the nation was founded upon initially. You want to build a new nation. You want to build a nation which man rules instead of God rules. That's what the deal is. You want to basically build a hell on earth is what you want to build.
All right. I've got two case studies to make this point. John Bolton, Salman Rushdie. Bolton turned to, it became a stool, a useful idiot for the FBI to go after Trump. The Iranians tried to take him out, and they just arrested an Iranian who was trying to assassinate John Bolton this week. Guess who just got attacked and is in the hospital?
Salman Rushdie. Yes, damn.
They've already attacked his publicist and two of his bodyguards over the past 30 years. Okay? Salman Rushdie wrote a book called The Satanic Verses. And here's the thing. This goes very much to where we think we're an enlightened society. The Iranians, we used to consider so backwards because they would censor speech. And if you say something that, you know, was against certain things they hold sacred, you got punished. Now, you say something on Twitter about a transgender person, you'll get punished.
Yeah.
You know? But I think what happened, part of this reminds me, there was a day when we stood by Salman Rushdie because we stood for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, artistic expression and that. And now I think it reminds us who we used to be. Now, your social credit score gets a ding if you don't believe in all the vaccine stuff.
Yeah, you almost have to wonder if our administration, our government hasn't made a deal with the Iranians.
Yeah.
That, you know.
I know. They're still in talks with them to get them some kind of nuclear energy.
Right. No, I'm talking about that we're not going to block you from getting Rushdie.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Right. That's what I'm wondering.
You
That's
know,
right.
They protected Bolton because he flipped.
Right.
But, you know, Rushdie evidently is of no use to him.
Yeah.
But it serves to scare people. That's why we need the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Why, we could get stabbed So anyway, that's something that came up in the news, and it serves to show, what was it Chuck Schumer said? If you take on the intelligence agencies, they got nine ways to take you down. And they do.
Yeah.
And we need a church commission. You and I remember that. We're baby boomers. You know, it's funny, Eddie. You and I remember what it was like in the Cold War days and the contrast between American society and the Soviet society. Now I can't tell the difference.
No, no. And I'll be real honest with you. I'd almost prefer to live in the Soviet Union because at least I know the rules.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
And you don't have that decadent Western culture either.
Right. Right. So I at least know, okay, I can do this, don't do that. Here, you don't know where you're going to step on because here we have the illusion of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we're free, mm-hmm. but you get on Facebook, Twitter, you name it, and you think you're free, so you express yourself. Next thing, somebody's knocking on your door. Mr. Huff, FBI.
Yeah.
You know, we need your cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Took a congressman's cell phone this week.
We want
week.
Your bank records.
Yeah.
This is the IRS.
Oh,
this
they just the, take your bank. You don't even know they got your bank records.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, it's worse.
Yeah.
In Russia, at least you know, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to live happily and shop and do whatever I'm going to do. I'm not going to mess. I'm not going to poke the bear. And that's what they're trying to get us to do here. So I'm going to finish with this because I want to get to our ballot here.
Yes. Okay? Yep.
My big peeve. This is my big peeve, and it's been my peeve for a long time. Okay? Mm-hmm. Churches and pastors. Okay.
Yep.
You guys have to stand up. You guys have to do something. Seriously.
Yeah.
Any pastor that is going to stand on the sideline and say, I'm not getting involved. This is not up to, and try to blame some lame, oh, I'm tired. I'm not going to listen to Fox News. I'm not going to listen to CNN. I'm going to stay neutral. Oh, BS.
Yeah. Yep.
BS. It's deeper than that. You're just copping out. You're just using that as an excuse. You don't need Fox News to know what's going on. You don't need CNN, MSNBC, Newsmax to know what's going on. There's enough right in front of you. And if you're not looking at the news, then you shouldn't be a pastor. You shouldn't be leading anybody. You are a hireling. You're the hireling spoken of in the 10th chapter of John.
Yep.
Okay, you need to step up your game. You pastors need to start preaching righteousness. We need some prophetic word. We need some prophetic word, and prophetic word is not telling us what the future is. It's speaking the truth. It's speaking righteousness into the world. I don't hear any righteousness. As I've said before, too many of you are busy renovating your living room, which is your little congregation, while the house is on fire. Okay? It's not going to do you any good to build up your local congregation when the city, the state, the nation is burning down. Your children are going to be in a literal hell, and that's not far away.
Yep.
You have got to step up. You have got to start speaking out against what is going on. And if you don't know what's going on, as I said, maybe you shouldn't be leading anyone. And if you don't, I'm sending this out right now. You better get with it. You better start reading. You better start paying attention. You need to see what's going on. Because if you don't, you're going to get run over.
But
your people are going to get run over. You're going to get left behind, and you're going to find yourself out. You think you're above it? You think God is going to save you from it? Uh-uh. No. God, ultimately, yes. He may save you from this world, but He's not going to save you while you're in the world. Okay? He's not going to save you. He's not going to save your family. He's not going to save your children and your children's children and your congregation. And when you get there before God and he's going to ask you what you did with your talent, you're going to, what are you going to tell him? Oh, well, we knew you would take care of it. Yeah, right. That's why I put you there is what he said. So
I'm not going to stop there, Eddie. I'm going to talk to the board members, the deacons, the church leaders, because I am sick of hearing this. Oh, but that would risk our 501c3 if we talk about politics. You know what? You talk about faith. You talk about convictions. You talk about righteousness. You talk about liberty as the Apostle Paul talked about liberty, as Jesus talked about, I have come to declare liberty. You know, this Moses came for setting free the captives. Freedom is not just a political thing. It's a spiritual thing. And we have to live it out in this world.
Yeah, I mean, if you're afraid of upsetting heavy tithers, then you're serving the wrong group of people.
Yeah.
You're serving the wrong group of people.
Yeah.
Your trust is not in the Lord. Your trust is in those heavy tithers that write you those letters, Eddie, and write you those
checks.
The
reason I say that is because a lot of these pastors are concerned primarily about the support of their board. And their board needs to hear this too.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. Why is the board concerned? Because of those heavy tithers.
Yes.
I mean, bottom line, it gets down to the love of money.
We might have to sell a bus, Eddie. We can't keep the... Yeah, and this is a problem. I remember a very prominent ministry here in Tulsa based. And they would keep using the term, we must protect the ministry. They weren't talking about the Great Commission that Jesus gave. They were talking about their corporation, their empire, their campus, their buildings, their structures with all the fancy gold facades. You know, the ministry doesn't need to be protected. Your kingdom on earth might. But listen, we are first commissioned to spread the gospel. If we have to do it out in the streets, so be it.
Right.
As Larry Norman said.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. I think that got that lifted up. But seriously, this has got to stop.
Yep.
It's got to stop. They're allowing lawlessness to rule. It's got to stop. And you, everyone watching this, you need to do your part by speaking the truth, speaking out against this unrighteousness stuff. And you cannot be offended because somebody spoke rudely. If you're speaking the truth rudely, unruly, it doesn't matter. You've just got to stand up for the truth. Mm-hmm. As we used to deal with Superman, truth, justice, and the American way.
There you go.
We've lost it. We've lost it, and we've got to gain it back. All right, Dave, let's get to the ballot.
All right, Eddie, I'm going to go through the ballot as I got mine. I'm doing an absentee ballot on this one because I got to head out of town for a little bit.
A week from Tuesday.
Yes. All right. Eddie, tell me who you're voting for if you've endorsed somebody. State Treasurer for Oklahoma, Todd Russ and Clark Jolly.
I don't have, I would probably lean towards Clark Jolly, but be honest, I don't know enough about Todd.
I'm definitely a Todd Russ guy.
Are you? I don't know, I just don't know enough about Todd to make an
assessment. Todd actually is a lay minister, Assembly of God, and he's from Cordell, Oklahoma, and I spent a summer out there. But really, I've watched him maintain his independence in the House and sometimes challenge the leadership when he needed to. And I like that kind of independence. He's his own man. Let's move on to the next one. Ryan Walters and Joy Hoffmeister 2.0. No, April Grace.
Of course, Ryan Walters. And I encourage you, if you get a chance, go back to our prior podcast where we had Ryan on and listen to him. I think there's really no other choice. April Grace, I hate to say April Grace is a disgrace. Mm-hmm. She's the one that essentially has called for the arrest, essentially, of the Epic founders, and has gone gung-ho over them. And she would not, let's put it this way, as Dave said, she would be Joy Hoffmeister 2.0.
Oh, yeah.
It would be no change, and we need a change. We need Ryan Walters. So whatever you do, not only support Ryan Walters, but get everyone you know to support Ryan Walters.
All right. For Labor Commissioner, we've got Leslie Osborne and Sean Roberts.
Again, I don't know enough about each of those to really...
Yeah, sadly, we were going to have Sean Roberts in. He had a commitment in Canadian County.
Yeah.
I have listened...
I would love to have had him in to get to know him.
One of the things I liked about Sean, he really went to bat this year, over the past year and a half, really, for health workers' rights to not have their genetic changes made through an experimental shot in order to keep their job. And
which would be the vaccine.
Right. Because it's experimental and it's DNA altering.
Right, yeah.
And stuff. So there's a lot of medical professionals, a lot of nurses said, look, my husband and I are planning a family. I'm not going to change my DNA now, because they have confirmed that it's causing a lot of pregnancy and birth problems. So anyway, and if there was ever a reason for right for hospital workers to unionize, it would be over something like that.
I'm waiting for, say, 10, 15 years from now when the lawsuits start coming down against Pfizer and...
So Sean has really been a leader in the legislature on protecting health workers. Okay, here we go. For Corporation Commissioner, Kim David and Todd Thompson.
Again, that's an area that I haven't... I remember the old crew that we had, but the new, I really don't even...
Yeah, I don't know Todd that well. I definitely have not been happy overall with Kim David's... legislative legacy in the Senate. She's and here we go for a U.S. Senator, Mark Wayne Mullen, T.W. Shannon.
I think we've already.
Yes, we are both Mullen.
And let me explain there's a couple of things. I've known Mark Wayne Mullen for probably 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And from the first moment I met with him, I have always observed he's a straight shooter. I may not always like what he says or what he does, but he always has a reason for it.
Yeah.
You might have noticed that. He always has a reason, and it always makes sense after you listen to it. Kind of like Senator Inhofe. Initially, I didn't understand why he made some of the decisions, why he's against earmarks and things. And that was the first time and he explained why he is, for earmarks.
Right, yeah.
And that when you don't earmark the money, it gives the president the right to do whatever he wants with the money.
Yes.
And I never understood that before. So basically, if our Congress doesn't earmark certain money for Oklahoma, then Joe can do whatever he wants with that money. And we may not get any of it. He can send it all to D.C. or his pet projects and so on. So these are things I never understood, even though, on the other hand, it sounded good. Oh, no more earmarks, no earmarks. That's Now I understood. Even though some people are using earmarks badly, like a bridge to nowhere and things like that. But there is a reason for the earmarks.
You actually can keep your budget lower through earmarks. And the reason why is the alternative to it is you have to give an agency so much money they have no excuse not to do it. Right. You know? Bonus content. Second district, we have a runoff. We have Avery Fricks.
I don't think we finished.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. So Mark Wayne, again, we're saying he's a straight shooter. There are a couple of issues that came up that we may not necessarily agree on totally, but I totally support Mark Wayne. I don't know about you.
Mark Wayne.
The other thing that really kind of disappointed me, I've been getting the flyers. I don't know if you've been getting any flyers in the last week or two from TW, but he's starting to send out flyers about how religious, how he's...
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, and when somebody starts getting real religious in the last couple of weeks, and you know, overly religious, I say, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's your last ditch effort. And it's just kind of an act of desperation. Okay, I'm going to try to get all these religious voters now, and I'm going to. Plus, the people backing him are not the best people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just know the people behind him are some of the same people and related to the people who have been running these dark money ads against Governor Stitt and some of the others. So because of that, it's guilt by association.
Yeah.
And so there are too many check marks again. I like TW. I just think he's gone about this in a very poor. He surrounded himself with the wrong people.
And he came right out and said he fully supports the McGirt decision, which I really have problems with.
Right. It's another one. So that's three strikes there. Three strikes. All right.
And by the way, bonus material. Second district, we've got Avery Fricks, a former state house member, and Josh Brekeen, a former state senator. And I'm supporting Brekeen. It's pretty hands down.
Yeah, I Josh is good. He's a good guy. He's shown himself to be a good guy. So we don't know Avery Fricks.
He voted for all those taxes in 2018.
Well, there it is.
Pretty much all of them.
There it is. Yeah. There it is. Yeah.
And Josh voted pretty much against all of them.
Yeah. So, and from the time Josh Brekeen started, he's always been a very reliable conservative voice in the state.
Good guy. There's just a little bit for those of you in City of Tulsa. There are three charter changes, and there's been very little said, and I'm against every one of them.
Anything that this city council and this mayor want to change in the charter, I would instantly say no. It can't be good.
Well, there are certain things we set in the charter that the people have to vote on, and these are things to take them away from the voters and just let the city council decide.
That ain't
happening.
No.
So there's that going on. There is a little bit of controversy. I don't want to get into it too much, but a former member of the county election board here in Tulsa County is now being investigated for ballot harvesting. And this is in the county commission race. Bob Jack is the person I'm referring to. He's challenging Kelly Dunkerley. And it has, actually, our district attorney, Steve Kunzweiler, happens to be friends with both of them. He's recused himself. The attorney general has now assigned it to the Creek County district attorney. And that's being investigated. Kevin Cantwell of Tulsa World has written a pretty good story on this. Really, David Arnett with Tulsa Today was the first to investigate this. And it's a legitimate story, but it's a test case. And so we don't know where it's going. Bob contends that he didn't do anything wrong. What it is he sent out bunches of mailers to people, their applications for an absentee ballot, where he filled in a bunch of information about them, and just so they could just basically sign it and a couple of other things. That's kind of it. I think it's creepy. I think it was a bad move politically. Whether it's legal or not, it's really hard to say.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if we talked about this last week, that I was actually leaning more towards Bob Jack until I was shown something by a client of mine, actually, and friends, that someone sent them attacking Dunkerley.
His employer.
About his employer. There was nothing about Dunkerley in the email. It was all about his employer.
Yeah.
And actually, the attacks on his employer were bogus attacks on the employer.
Right. A Christian businessman, insurance agent, who's actually done you a bunch of favors professionally.
Well, yeah. And he not just that. That sounds bad. He's done me favors.
I mean, he's helped you out with some things.
Well, he's tried. I mean, we were trying to quote and write the policy for Oklahoma Wesleyan University.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's got experience in that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. He's a real strong Christian guy. I used to go to Bible studies with him. He used to run a men's study every Friday morning.
Yeah.
And a bunch of us would go, and that's how I met him. And he's still a very well-respected Christian business guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the guy is right on. He's never done mm-hmm. anything above. And Dunkerley has already agreed to recuse himself. And he's quitting his job, basically. If he
right.
if he wins this, he will no longer be writing insurance. So he can't make any money
yeah.
for it, so, from it. So, but this attack on him was basically saying that he is going to profit and this agency is going to profit and this and this. And the truth be told, he can't, because the way the city and the county bid, they don't allow you to get a percentage. It's a yeah. flat fee,
yeah.
which you don't really make. It's too complicated to explain, but the article was just, or the email was so bad that it really totally turned me off
yeah.
that anyone would write anything like this. And it just showed underhandedness, and it totally turned me against Bob Jack and his yeah. candidacy.
No, I've talked to a couple of people, and I told Kelly Dunkerley the other night. I was at a party he was at, and I mentioned that. I said, you know, there's a time when negative can go too far. And I said, I think that happened with Eddie.
Jumped the shark.
You know? And I said, Eddie was kind of leaning towards Bob until he saw how badly, I had said to Kelly, I said, your boss, the insurance agency, was attacked. He said, that's it, because he knows Mark. Mark's a solid man, a man of conviction, a generous man.
Mm-hmm.
And that. And then I told another guy who happened to be a Bob Jack supporter, and he said, Eddie ought to know better. He should separate that out and still understand that Bob's a better candidate.
Yeah, well, that man is an idiot. You go tell him, and you can tell him I mean that.
Yeah.
If he can't understand, I'm supposed to separate that out, that somebody would be able to take something that unethical,
mm-hmm.
and I'm supposed to overlook that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Then no, you're not the right guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So anyway, just so you guys know, what I've got to do, there's like three envelopes here. I've got to vote, put it in a packet, and then I've got to take it down to a notary, wherever I get a notary.
Oh, really? You mean you don't, there's not just a drop box?
No.
At 11th and Yale right. or somewhere? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think 61st and Lewis. 61st
yeah.
and
yeah.
But anyway, and then I've got to have a notary watch my signature on the outside of that, and then that notary stamps it. Then I put that in another envelope, okay? And then I put that in a third envelope, and then I mail that. So you got your ballot that's inside an envelope, that's inside another envelope, inside another envelope. And that's,
man,
that's you, how you...
You they, might as well go vote.
Yeah. Well, and again, and I would, I just happened to, you know, and by the way, those of you who can't vote next Tuesday, in most counties, you've got Thursday, Friday, and probably Saturday morning that you can vote absentee in person down at your county election board. And some big counties like Tulsa set up a second location in the county. So I think here it's Hardesty Library. They usually do that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, that's it. Be sure to vote. Be sure
yeah,
to vote.
Please go vote. And please vote for everybody we told you to vote for.
Of course. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Yeah. Right. Oh, by the way, and if we disagreed on anybody.
Oh, God, here it comes.
Vote for me, I ain't not him.
Yes, because he's older and wiser.
Oh, yeah, there you
in
go.
In most things.
Yeah, yes. Sure, yes. Sure, that works. No, yeah. No, seriously, you vote for who you feel is the right person to vote for.
Yeah.
We're just giving you our opinions.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of America, seriously. Hey. We say all of these things, but in the end, it's up to you. And whoever gets chosen, that's who we yeah. live with, and that's who we deal with from the national level down. We warned people, we tried to warn people back in 2020, what was it, 221, mm-hmm. who to vote for or not yeah. to vote for. And, no, it was 220 when we voted,
mm-hmm.
and we got what we wanted. And what's funny to me, I had this guy on Facebook, an old high school friend of mine, and he's still, oh my goodness, they just can't. They can't see.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me scripturally. mm-hmm. how the eyes are so blinded mm-hmm. that Satan has so blinded some people to see that they can't even see
right.
what's going on.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to me that most of us can see clearly what is happening, where we're headed, but others cannot see.
Yeah.
And unless it's a spiritual blindness.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's why I think prayer is still so important. Mm-hmm. And praise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Praise. We've got to.
Yeah.
Let me close with this.
Well, okay. I've got a teaser for the next show also. So.
Well, you tease then I'll.
Okay. Coming up in an upcoming show, Paul Tay was just basically exonerated. He had been charged a year ago, spent a year in jail, only to have the prosecutors drop the charges. I'm trying to reach out to Paul. In the past, he's reached out to me. Paul, if you're out there, we need to talk. This is going to be an interesting story, Eddie. We don't have time for it today, but our next show, we need to talk.
Yeah, about. Yeah. You kind of teased me with it and told me about it. I thought, this is weird.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. What do you got?
Psalm 150.
Yeah.
And this is it's the last psalm. Mm-hmm. It's the last psalm, but it is very powerful. And it's the ultimate spiritual warfare psalm. And I think we don't understand or use it enough, but it's about praise. In fact, the last several psalms are about praise.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, it says, praise the Lord. Praise God in his sanctuary. Praise him in his mighty firmament. Praise him for his mighty acts. Praise him according to his excellent greatness. Praise him with the sound of the trumpet. Praise him with the lute and harp. Praise him with the timbrel and dance. Praise him with stringed instruments and flutes. Praise him with loud cymbals. Praise him with clashing cymbals. Let everything that hath breath praise the Lord. Okay, so we're supposed to praise. But now, if we go back one to Psalm 149, this is what actually happens through praise. Praise the Lord. Sing the Lord a new song, and his praise in the assembly of saints. Let Israel rejoice in their maker. Let the children of Zion be joyful in their king. Let them praise his name with a dance. Let them sing praises, timbrel and harp. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let them sing aloud. Now here's the important part. Listen to this. This is very powerful. Let the high praises of God be in their mouths and a two-edged sword in their hand to execute vengeance on the nations and punishments on the peoples, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron, to execute judgment written, to execute on them the written judgment. This honor have all his saints. So basically, when we give the high praise, let the high praises of God be in our mouths, it will be a two-edged sword in our hand to execute vengeance mm-hmm. on the nations. So essentially, as we pray, it becomes a weapon for us against the nations, against those that will come mm-hmm. against God and his people, okay? Mm-hmm. And it will execute the punishment and bind the kings and the powers of the air and the rulers of darkness, and it'll bind their kings with chains and their nobles, their henchmen, with fetters of iron mm-hmm. to execute the judgment written against them. And this is the final thing. This honor have all of his saints, yeah. every one of us.
Yep.
You and I have this yep. honor. So if you ever get a chance, read that and meditate on it. And that's what the power of praise is. Prayer is powerful, but praise specifically can be used to execute vengeance and protection for mm-hmm. saints against evil.
Yeah, because, you know, God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. It's without faith, it's impossible to please God. And there's no greater act of faith than to thank God in advance for already doing it.
And praise.
And that's what praise is. It's thanking God for his faithfulness and caring for us and rescuing us and pleading our case.
I can't tell you how many times that act of praise
yeah.
and thanksgiving
mm-hmm.
has changed things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What helped me when I became a new believer early on, Someone gave me the book Prison to Praise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Merlin Carruthers.
Yeah. Gosh, that's way back there, yeah.
Yeah, that's way back there, yeah. About 50 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Prison to Praise.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a follow-up, Power and Praise.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance, you can probably buy it for about $3 now on Amazon. But it's an amazing book, but it's what got me started in praising God, and it shows the power in praise.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to wrap it up, but I did want to leave you with that.
Good word.
Praise is very important, especially at this time, because it seems as evil is rampant, evil is winning. But as long as you hold fast to God in faith and praise Him, we will win.
That's part of guarding your heart, you know, is make sure that you're not given over to fear.
Right.
And torment and the bondage that fear gives. So,
yep. All right.
He will rescue.
Yes, He will. Dave, have a great week.
Yes.
Everybody out there, have a great week. God bless. And we'll talk to you next week.
Consequences he might face.